You're listening to WFHB Bloomington at 91.3 FM, W251AG Bloomington at 98.1 FM, W264BP Nashville at 100.7 FM, and W292DD Ellettsville at 106.3 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana. In this special moth-inspired oral storytelling project, ninth grade students at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship share their narratives with us.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the fifth annual Moth event. I'm so happy to see so many faces here today. It looks like some family members have come to join us as well. So good to see you all. My name is Callie, and today we're going to get into this. Our theme today is hope and humor. So let's get started with our first story. We're starting with Patrick McKierney, his story, A Pair of Broken Ice Skates. Now, Patrick runs cross country for Bloomington High School North, and he's part of the Academy Robotics team. Give it up for Patrick.
So some people have always grown up on a pair of ice skates. They've been skating since they were two. Now, I am not one of these people. Don't get me wrong. I'm the person that's always on the railing, and if I let go of the railing, I'm going to fall really hard. So I decided I wanted to take ice skating lessons to really learn how to actually ice skate. So my mom also wanted to take them, so we decided to sign up for ice skating lessons together. Now, we got there, quickly laced up our ice skates, and trudged on the ice. She went over to the adult class while I went to the children's class. So there was roughly about seven kids there with one instructor. And we started with this complicated exercise called swizzles. So swizzles are where you take your ankles and your feet and you move them in and out in an S motion. It's supposed to keep your balance as well as propel you forward. So I was really struggling with this. I could not get this. And I was struggling with the first exercise. I mean the first exercise. I was thinking to myself, how am I going to make it through this? How am I actually going to do this? I can't do the first exercise. So after a few minutes of practicing, the instructor starts taking us one by one across the ice, holding us so we don't fall, so we can just practice the motions without having to worry about the balance. So I was second to last in the line, so I got to watch all the other kids struggle with this and thinking to myself, for what felt like an eternity, I am never going to be able to do this. I'm going to hurt myself really bad. So it finally came my turn, so I grabbed on the instructor and started going. So I was doing okay, going through the steps, going through the motions, and I made it about halfway across the ice until my left ice skate got lodged into the ice. And because he was holding on to me, I kept twisting. My leg twisted in a way it definitely shouldn't have. I don't exactly know what happened, but it messed up and it hurt. So I fell to the ground crying, and my mom saw me and she skated over. And we knew something was messed up and I needed to go to the hospital. So they had someone come carry me out and we grabbed him in the car and sped to prompt care. So we got there and we enter the building and they're like, sorry, we're closed. We're like, what? What are you talking about? It's 8:30. Now, I guess I didn't break my leg at 2 p.m. so they would have been open. So they're like, you have to go to the emergency room. We're like, what? We're here. What are you talking about? Can you just fix my leg? Because I was crying. I was in so much pain. So they wouldn't let us, so we had to quickly speed to the emergency room. We got there, waited a little bit because, you know, medical services tend to be a lot slow. Then we finally get someone in. They have to x-ray it, but the person that lays the cast is not there, so I have to come back in the morning. So we come back in the morning. We get there, they show us the x-rays, and my leg was fractured. So I had to get a cast, which I could choose from the pretty pink one or the pretty pink one. So I had to get the pretty pink one, and luckily no kids made fun of me, even though I thought I would because it was second grade and I was a guy. But I guess no kids really wanted to make fun of the person in a wheelchair. So for about 2 months I had to be in a wheelchair, and it was really hard because it didn't feel like the safety regulations for wheelchaired were up in my school. There weren't that many ramps and the elevator did not seemed to make it to code. So every time I got in there, it felt like I was gonna die. But finally got over that, and I got put on crutches. And I really like crutches until about an hour. Then they get really sore. So finally after that, we get through. I get through that, and then I am recovered. And don't worry, we definitely got our refund at the ice skating place because they were really happy to give it to us because they just didn't want us to sue. So It took me about 8 years to go back there because I was petrified of ice skating. And then I finally went back there until... And then I finally went back there and I ice skated. I started on the wall like everybody else and fell a few times. But luckily, I actually figured out how to do it and I could ice skate even better than some of my friends would. I was surprised. I was like, at least I didn't hurt myself again. At least I didn't break my leg again. So, I mean... I made it longer than 10 minutes this time. I didn't even have to go to ice skating lessons. So I guess I learned that it's not always your fault. This time might have been a pair of faulty ice skates, but overall I conquered my fear.
Thank you so much, Patrick. That was an amazing story. Now we're going to be going on to Philip Mendez with his story, Bonfire Neo. Mendez is a freshman in high school that likes Games of Thrones and video games. He especially likes fighting games and likes Smash Bros. Because they heavily rely on skill. Give it up for Philip Mendez.
Hey, guys. When I was 11, I got my dad to invite my uncle from Florida over for the weekend of 4th of July. So, it took a lot of convincing, but my dad finally called him. So we go to pick him up a couple days later, and my dad and my uncle talk for a little bit, and then my uncle looks over to me and decides to hug me. The only issue with this is my uncle sweats a lot, especially when he got off the plane. So here's me, an 11-year-old, and my uncle, a 6-foot-tall, overweight guy that smells like lunch meat, hugging me, and I'm just like, it's gonna be a long weekend. So we go home, everything's normal for a bit, and one of the other things that was super nice was my uncle bought us a lot of rallies. So there's that too. But later we decided to shoot off fireworks, which was kinda nice until it started raining the next day. But we decided to shoot off more of them. And then my dad was like, yo, why don't we have a bonfire? It's gonna be nice. And I was like, okay. So I was pumped. I was like, this is gonna be a great bonfire. My dad like went and got us to collect firewood and stuff. And so we do that. And about an hour later, we finally light the bonfire. And so my dad looks over to my uncle, and they kind of just look at each other for a moment, start talking. And then next thing I know, my dad picks up the box of fireworks and sets it in the bonfire. I don't know what was going through his mind. Like, my uncle, like, looks at him kind of funny for a moment. But then, you know, the fireworks start going off. So... people, you've seen The Matrix, right? When like Neo first discovers his powers and like all the bullets stop. It was sort of like that, but it was with the fireworks. But instead of like dodging the bullets, I got hit by 2 fireworks. Yeah. So my hair is smoldering. I got a little burn on my neck. I look at my dad like he's crazy. And we call it a night. Yeah, so I learned a couple important things from this. I learned why I don't like 4th of July anymore. I also learned how to not dispose of fireworks the right way. And this has been my story.
That was a great story, Philip. Thank you so much. All right, so now we're going to get into the story from Zach Summit. His story is called, I Fell Asleep, a Human, and Awoke a Monster. Now, Zach is a fan of scary movies, and he also enjoys writing creatively. All right, give it up for Zach.
Okay, well, I was a marginalized teen and kid most of my childhood because of where I came from. I wasn't always this kid who enjoyed creative writing and writing in artsy modeling and stuff because of what kids viewed me as. I was basically, around the time of this, I was basically semi-poor, or my parents were in a very, very nasty divorce, in which the elementary and middle school I went to, it looked like a very foreign and strange concept. And so basically up until the age of 12, I was verbally and physically abused and assaulted by my quote-unquote peers and teachers. And I began to withdraw from them until 2 years later. I was 14 years old, and I was sitting in my sibling's apartment. She was she had long since grown up by now, and she had her own apartment, but that didn't really matter. Well, like I said, it was late October, and I was watching my favorite Teen Wolf movie, The Howling Reborn. It's a really good one. I think you guys might like it. And she tells me to get up, that we were going to go meet some friends. So I'd say about after a 35 to 40 minute drive out into the country, in front of us was this big black and orange banner that simply read, in stereotypical Halloween style writing, Haunted Acres, with a jack-o'-lantern style smile on there. And immediately I think to myself, great, I'm gonna be another victim to YouTube. But their trend of basically sending people into haunted houses and them reacting to actors jumping out at them. But it was the complete opposite. Considering basically I walk in, I notice a lot of things are off. One, there are rarely anybody there. I mean, it's almost like a ghost town almost. Almost except for a few people walking about here and there, which I assumed were actors. And I noticed, and I tell my sister, what's going on? Like, why is this place so abandoned? And she tells me that we're not here to be scared by actors, because we are the actors. And so she leads me to this tent, and so the makeup artist asks me, what's your biggest fear? And I simply say, hey, whatever child's fear was. And 9 times out of 10, it was the dark. And she looks at my sister and says, ooh, this is going to be my best project yet. And so she tells me to close my eyes and let my mind go blank. And I must have dozed up or slept because I woke up to my sister shaking me awake. Like, and there was my most biggest fear, in which the makeup artist did a pretty good spot on job of. It was basically what I could describe as this ghost thing that was covered in sheer wine and toothpicks were embedded into the makeup that I had applied to my face. And I get assigned to a group of kids who are about my age. Most of them either range from mid-teens to early 20s, but that didn't really matter. We were all basically there to make a quick buck, so yeah. So after a few hours of jumping out from corners and cornstalks, oxen scaring children and adults alike, we were told to take a break. And so basically I'm about to go make my way back to the makeup tent in which my sister worked as a makeup artist. Or an assistant makeup artist, my mistake. And so as I'm walking back there, I hear one of my fellow creepsters who's just walking over her and say, hey, where are you going? And I say, well, I'm going back to my sister. I said, no, you're coming over with us. You're one of us now. An exact moment. I felt something. I felt like it was something I felt like I lost. It was happiness. That exact night, that night of nights, that I never thought that type of behavior would occur. It did. And then later on that night, I told my sister how exciting it was, how nice it felt to make friends, how nice that this guy accepted me. And she turns to me, smiling, and she says, do you honestly think I just took you there so a bunch of people could just annoy the hell out of you with jump scares? And then it hit me. Why she took me there in the first place. She didn't take me there just so I could so she could waste a couple of bucks just to be scared by him or by cheap animatronics and jump scares. She took me there because she knew the spot I was in. She knew that basically I was depressed, I was alone, and just abused. And that's basically where the moral of the story comes in. If you see someone that's in that place that I was in, bring them into your fold. Show them, Benton, that there are people who are just like you, that are willing to become part of you and become your friend. Show them that it may look bleak and dark now, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I found my light. Now, basically, I'm part of a big group of friends, and even bigger than that, and kudos to my boss for looking into my art bag while I was conked out while sleeping. And being say also, now I'm basically supporting advertising artists for haunted houses and other Halloween festivities. The end, everybody.
Well, that was quite the message, Zach. Thank you so much. Now we're going to get into the story from Alex Wall. His story is called How I Got Through Middle School. Alex is a high school student who enjoys monochrome clothing and video games. Give it up for Alex.
So, during middle school, as with most teenagers my age, I was suffering through anxiety and depression. Every single day, I would just be on the bus, being bullied, and as usual, as with many middle schools, I would just be crying in the bus. And I remember one day, I was just sitting on my bus, just trying to keep my anxiety from making me explode out of tears. And the neighborhood bully decided to sort of pick on me. That's whenever I got into a fight, and eventually I was kicked off that bus. I ran home that day, sobbing in tears, and I just ran straight into my freezing cold room and slammed the door. And the only thing I knew I could do was just lay in the bed, put on my headphones, and just listen to my music. Because for me now, the only way for me to cure myself from my sadness and to make all the other problems in my life just go away is just to have an escape from reality. Whether that be just watching YouTube videos or listening to Owl City or Imagine Dragons, that's how I stayed put and stayed collected every single day throughout middle school. Every day I told myself, whenever I thought I couldn't keep going, I always said, just wait until you get home. You can then just walk in there, just grab your microwavable pizza, walk into the freezing cold room of yours, and just escape. Now, I still escape from reality every single day. I tend to do that a lot more often than I did back then. Still, it helps me through lots of problems that are going on right now. And although I still suffer with depression, I still love to escape from reality. There's nothing more better than to just feel like you're worry-free, that you're part of a community that loves you and cares about you, that doesn't yell at you or pick on you, or they just accept you for who you are, and they make sure that you know that they like you because who you are. Thank you.
Right. Thank you so much, Alex. You did a great job.
You are listening to a special moth-inspired oral storytelling project featuring narratives from ninth grade students at Bloomington's Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship.
Next up is Walter Richardson with his story, You Didn't Have to Cut the Rope. Walter is a kind person who tries his best to make people happy, and while also being himself. He is a freshman in high school, and he enjoys Pizza Fridays, turtles, and nesting penguins. Walter Richardson, everyone.
I live in a neighborhood hidden by some trees in a city. It's fairly large, but it doesn't have very many kids my age in it. I have this one friend who I've known since I was born, literally. She was born just a few weeks before me, and our parents were friends, so it was pretty much guaranteed that we would be friends. But I'm glad it was. I like this because I was able to go over to her house twice a week without really having to plan anything. It would just be like, you know, one phone call and then walk over to her house and then hang out for the day. And they lived there for a good 10, maybe more years, but and they said they would move someday, but they never did. And then one day she was looking through some houses that were for sale online, and she found one she liked, called her parents over, and they liked it enough to actually go to one of its open houses. Okay, like a little bit of panic levels rising, but I mean, they're probably not going to buy it, right? I mean, well, a few months later, they bought the house, and they moved away from our neighborhood. And this made me really sad. I mean, I knew we would still see each other, but not nearly as often, because it went from being like a 5-minute walk to a 30-minute drive, like outside of town. And I also wanted a person in the neighborhood that I could go and hang out with. And so I decided that I was going to make a new friend. So I spent the next 7 days biking around our neighborhood looking for a person my age to make friends with. And then I actually did find someone. I think we were 12 at the time, and she would come over to my house and we would play things like swing on our tire swings or, you know, play baseball, which is really just where one person throws a ball at the other person and the other person swings a stick wildly at it and tries not to get hit. And just, you know, other things like that. And in the winter, we would go sledding down the hill across the street. And one day, one weekend, it was my mom's birthday, and so my grandparents came to take our family out to lunch as a treat. And so that was really fun, and when we got back, me and my sister got bored of all the adult conversations, as 12-year-olds do, 12-year-old and 8-year-olds do, and so we decided to go outside and play. And so we go to get our shoes on, and she manages to get her shoes on before me, because the last time I'd taken mine off, I had somehow managed to, like, wrap it around my foot, the laces, and just get it, like, all messed up. And so I tell her to go outside, and that I would be out in a few more minutes. So she goes outside, but before I am untying my shoe, she comes back in and says, "Mama, the tire swing's gone," which is pretty odd. And so my mom replies, "You mean like it fell down?" And my sister says, "Maybe, but there's nothing where it was." So me and my mom go outside after I finally got my shoe tied, and sure enough, the tire swing is missing. We have a swing that's like a disc, but the other tire swing is like not there. And after some closer examination, we noticed that the rope had been cut at about the height of an average human's eye level. And under it, there was a pink jacket and a cell phone. And I immediately recognized the jacket. It had belonged to my new neighborhood friend. And so I'm thinking, well, it's probably not what it looks like. Like, she probably just left it the last time we were playing. But anyway, I wanted to be sure. So I get on my bike, and I ride around the block. And when I reach her house, guess what I find? She is hanging up the tire swing in the tree in her front yard. So this would be like stealing a car and then parking it in the front driveway 3 houses down from where you stole it from. So she sees me, and she has this look of utter horror on her face. And she immediately says, "I can't come out." And so this isn't looking very good for her. So I ask her, like, where she found it. And she's stuttering like crazy. She can't even talk. So I offer some suggestions to try to help jog her memory. And I suggested one that wasn't really a very good one, and she chose that as her excuse. And then I suggested something like, or maybe this happened, and then she's like, oh yeah, that's actually what happened. So at this point, I know it was her that had stolen the tire swing, which is a very weird thing to steal. But so anyway, after some more talking, I take the tire swing, put it on my bike handlebars, and take it home, which is not a very easy thing to do. And a few days later, we hang it up with a stainless steel cord. And so it was a long time before she came back to get her jacket and cell phone, and that told me that she felt really bad for having taken it, because she had worn that coat every day since she was 7 years old. She had told me herself. And of course, cell phone. People can't live without their cell phones today. So, and she only ever did come over, I think, two or three times after that, which made me really sad. Like, I didn't really care about the tire swing. If she had wanted it that badly and asked for it, I probably would have given it to her. What I really wanted was a friend. And if she apologized, I would have accepted that apology. And to this day, I probably still would. And this was my first time seeing someone do something and then regret it severely, like immediately after. And this experience has helped me from making similar mistakes in the future. And I know she still feels bad about it, because I am the only person in the bus who she actually lets out into the aisle. And so she's a good person, and she just made a mistake. She cut the rope.
Thank you so much, Walter. That was a great story. Next, we're going to go on to Will Kehoe III with his story, Big Sad Oof. Will is just a guy who likes to look like the freshman version of Al Capone. Come on, Will.
All right. So I have two maternal uncles. I have my Uncle Travis and my Uncle JR. This story is about my Uncle JR. So me and him were extremely close. Whenever I was younger, he would take me to the library every day. He really supported me getting an education because he himself did not choose the best path in life. He was out of jail most of his life. And if you think I'm exaggerating, no. The first time he ever got into legal trouble was when he was three. And with his partner in crime, his five-year-old cousin, they tried to steal a car radio. Don't know how that works, but somehow it did. So he, like I said, he had gotten into a lot of trouble, and he'd be with us every once in a while, and he didn't want me to go down that path of life, so he wanted me to get the best education I could. So he wanted to make sure we didn't live in the best area, so he wanted to make sure I was still, comfy. He wanted to make sure I wasn't getting lonely, since I couldn't play with my friends outside that much, that kind of stuff. But I was always, you know, a little bit angry. He was in and out of jail all the time. Remember one time, whenever I was close to 10, I just had to ask, great, he's out, but how long till he's back in? And, you know, it was a little while later, but I was about 11. He went to jail again. Usually he'd get a few years, but this time it wasn't the same. He had 52 years. So we were sad, and we'd accepted that it'd be a while before we saw him, but what we didn't really accept was what happened later. We'd gotten a call from the hospital. One of our friends worked there. And I didn't know what happened. All I heard was a slam come from our downstairs living room. So I run down the stairs, and I'm asking my mom, what happened? What's wrong? What happened? I don't get what's going on. And as I remember, the only thing she said was, he's dead. So I still don't know what's going on. So I just ask, who's dead? What happened? Is Grandpa okay? And as she told me, what she said was, my brother's with Jesus. So I break down. We have a couch near us, and I just go over and I sit down. I'm sobbing extremely uncontrollably. I'm hyperventilating. I'm unable to breathe. And I end up throwing up because I'm just not breathing right. And that was the only chance I was able to start breathing again. We didn't have a way to get to and from places at the time, so we had to call one of our friends, and they drove us to the hospital, where we met up with my grandpa and one of our aunts. And we couldn't go see the body, obviously, but one of the people who worked at the jail came down and talked to us. And what he had said is that it was true, my uncle had hung himself that night. So we go home, and I go to school. Now, we had to do research on different ways, different cultures mourn the dead. And one that I found particularly interesting was the Chinese Lantern Festival. Now, we took this and kind of modified a little bit. We had put messages on it, just saying things like, hey, Jay, how are you? Things are going great down here. And we put the date, our location, that kind of stuff on it to see how far they would go. It was just kind of like a message, even though he wasn't still there, we could still talk to him in some way, in some shape. And after he passed, we had to split up the stuff that he had bought with, that he'd bought legally. So my mom got his car, and I'd gotten his Xbox controller. And my mom had made it to where once I turn 18, I can get his car, so I have a way into and from college. Even though this was after he passed away, I just kind of saw it as this message of, even though I'm not here, I still want you to get that education. You can't slack, boy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that touching story with us, Will. Our next story for today is from Iris Holmes, called Turkey Sandwich. Iris is a high school student who has two fish named Bob and Ross. Come on, Iris.
Okay, so this story starts in the grade, somewhere between third and fourth grade. I was in adventure camp. Adventure camp is like a school-based program where they basically prepare you for the next grade by like activities like board and card games. So we were in class, we did all of our activities for the morning, and we did some math. So I got my lunchbox, everybody got ready for lunch. We walked down the hallway into these big doors, and as you walked into the cafeteria, you can see all of the lunch tables, and to the left, there was a big stage with a big red curtain. Across the cafeteria, you can see the salad bar, and above that is the big Humpty Dumpty that was concrete. And he always had this colorful suit on, and all of the kids would be like, what would happen if he falls? What about all those kids underneath him? So we sit down, we caught up with each other, and so we all looked at our lunch, we got it out, and I had a turkey sandwich, some chips and pudding. I took out my turkey sandwich, I opened a container, and it looked good. It smelled fine. The turkey looked delicious. The cheese and the mayonnaise that was coming out. So I bit into it, and I was like, that's good. But it wasn't. It was disgusting, and I started to gag. And I grabbed my lunchbox, and I puked into it. All of my food. So I looked up slowly, and none of my friends had noticed. Nobody was looking at me. They were all just laughing. I looked up at Humpty Dumpty, and he was staring at me, and I was shamed. And so I closed the lunchbox. I put it down to my side, and I just started laughing with my friends again, started telling stories again. We went back to class. I took the lunchbox, and I hid it at the back of the closet, where all of the backpacks were, and I was like, I'm not grabbing that. And I looked at it, and I was like, don't you dare start smelling. And so I sat down, we did the rest of the day, and I got into the bus with my lunchbox. And I got home, I walked inside, I saw my family, they were all sitting there, and I went straight to the kitchen sink and I washed it out. And then I stuck it in the cabinet and I never brought my lunch again. So I never told anybody. The only person who ever knew was Humpty Dumpty. And I was, February of this year, I was sitting on the couch and I was like, Mom, I gotta tell you something. I puked into my lunchbox at adventure camp. And she just like slowly looked at me, very ashamed, and she was like, you're weird. So I was like, yeah, Mom, I know. So the moral of the story is don't let your mom pack your lunch, and meat is disgusting. Thank you.
That was a great story, Iris. Thank you so much. Now we're going to go on to Eliana Dix with her story, another surgery story. Eliana was born in North Carolina, and she only moved to Indiana 3 years ago. She's still adjusting to the flat and barren Indiana farmland. Thank you so much, Eliana.
So it all started in December of 2008. It was Christmas Eve. We just got to Ohio. We got off the plane, and it was like, wow, it's already snowing. Christmas wish came true. I loved it. I was lived in North Carolina, and I rarely ever saw snow because it was so hot, like almost all the time. So we got to my grandparents' house, and we ate dinner, and I went to bed. Out of the corner of my ear, I thought I heard Santa's sleigh bells. And I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, Santa's gonna come. It's gonna be the best Christmas ever. It's already snowing. This is amazing. And then suddenly, I feel a stabbing pain in my side. It wasn't gonna be the best Christmas ever. So when we got back home to North Carolina, I never really had a history of like really high fevers. I always like averaged around like 90 to like 99 to 100. But this time, I had about a week of just 105 to 107 repeatedly. And if you don't know, 105 and 107 are really dangerous because at 113, your brain cells start to die and you probably go to the hospital. And I don't know if my brain cells died, but I think I'm okay now. So after that, my mom took me to the doctor because she was like, hey, you're not okay. You're in a lot of pain. Let's do that. And even to this day, I dread going to the doctor's office and them saying, hey, you need to go pee in a cup. Because every single time they would come back and say, hey, you have a UTI. Ha, it's so fun. Again, like at least every single time I went there. So it was pretty great. And they always gave me these stupid cranberry pills. And I hate cranberries. They're the most disgusting things ever. And having to take these giant cranberry pills and putting them in applesauce it was disgusting. I hated it. But this time it was a little different. I was waiting for them to say it, but then they didn't say it. They said, oh, you have another problem. You have a kidney infection. And I was like, no, I don't. No, it's bad. No. Like, yeah, you do. We got to do some testings at the hospital. And yeah. I was 4, and so I went to the hospital, and there was this big old, like, dark room. I had to lay on this metal table, and then they were like, we're going to stick a catheter in you. And me being 4, I didn't know what that was. I was like, okay, this is fine. When they did it, it was really painful. It, like, really, really hurt, especially when they finally did the testing. They're like, they pumped fluid into my bladder to see what was the urine and what was the fluid. And what they discovered was instead of me being able to pee out my urine, it went back up into my kidney and decided to fester there and grow bacteria, which is great. And when those testing was done, they were like, you have urinary reflux, which is exactly what I just explained. And urinary reflux typically needs surgery to get cured. So it was kind of a spooky, scary thing to happen to me. When they were going to do surgery, and the few times they tried to do this procedure, they had me awake. And I didn't really like that because it was really painful, and I was 4. I didn't want to really watch that ballerina mouse show again because that didn't really help. But they still were like, yeah, you'll be fine. Just keep doing it over and over again. And they finally got to the point where I'm pretty sure my mom or my dad were like, we can't do this anymore. You have to go under. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get anesthesia. I'm going to go under. I could have an actual surgery. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. Grab my little stuffed animal. Go up there. I'm so ready. And when I got there, they put me under, obviously. And when I woke up, I was really groggy. I was like really out of it. And when I was out of it, and it was an outpatient surgery, meaning that I go in there, I leave immediately after, which I don't really think is a good idea due to the fact that I just first had anesthesia that first time ever my whole entire life.
And also just getting out of the surgery, meaning that I'm really dizzy and sick and kind of gross. But they were like, I'm going to give you popsicle, make it everything better. And these kind of popsicle were like the ones that have the real fruit in them. It was amazing. The best thing ever. I loved them. I still love them now. But this strawberry popsicle was like literally God. So my dad offered me to ride on his shoulders. So on the way out to the car, my popsicle fell. My hands. I was devastated. Oh my God, my popsicle is gone forever. I won't ever get it again. And then he was like, okay, I'm gonna pick it up now. He took me off his shoulders. He was like, can you stand? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I can totally stand. Well, I couldn't really stand. I ended up actually collapsing under the floor, throwing up everywhere and blacking out. Actually, a doctor came by while I was passed out and throwed up everywhere. And they're like, is she okay? My friends were like, yeah, she's fine. Don't worry. And when I finally came to again, I was so confused. I was like, what's happening? Why did I black out? Where'd my popsicle go? Like, well, your popsicle's gone. And I wanted to cry because it was just, a popsicle was so important to me. And that was the only thing I ever got out of the whole entire experience, was that stupid popsicle I had for 5 minutes before it disappearing and being thrown up on, and I'd never get out again. And, well, I did learn something from that experience. Currently, I still had a lot of problems after that with my urinary tract because of the damage that had already been done. But I did learn to take better care of myself and not do those unhealthy habits, because that's probably a bad idea and I'm not gonna do that again. I don't wanna get surgery and lose a popsicle again. But yeah, I lost a popsicle within 5 minutes of getting a surgery, and that's my only thing I got. Thank you.
That was a great story, Eliana. Thank you so much.
You are listening to a special moth-inspired oral storytelling project featuring narratives from ninth grade students at Bloomington's Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship.
And now we're going to go on to Rochelle Elks, and with her story, No Joke Zone. Rochelle is a stressed out but dedicated student. She's also super nervous, so cut her some slack. Rochelle. Rochelle, you can do
it. So 2018 was a really horrible year for me, and this is why. In late August, I was in geometry class, and I was getting really bad pains in my abdomen, and I didn't know why, but I shrugged it off. This is a really dumb thing to do, but my Asian parents gave me the best gift in life, lactose intolerance. And so I thought I ate something that had a lot of lactose in it, and I didn't know, and this is a consequence of it. I did eventually tell my mom later that day that I did have pains, and I'm a hypochondriac, so I thought I was having a heart attack, I was having a stroke, appendicitis, something like that. So my mom eventually calmed me down and said, no, you're fine, you're not gonna die. And she's mom, she's always right. So we ignored it. So skip to September 17th, where my mom starts to get really bad pains in her abdomen. And at this point, I had totally forgotten about what happened with me. And we were trying to look up what was happening on Google, and apparently appendicitis and other issues could have been it. And we ignored it again, but she did eventually go to the hospital because it was getting worse. So whenever she was diagnosed, they said that she had tip appendicitis, which is like the distal appendix that is inflamed, and she could have chosen to get it removed, and she did, instead of taking the antibiotics, because just get it over with, right? So she got out that Wednesday, and then 2 days later, that Friday, I come home, I eat something because I'm obviously hungry, and then I start to get really bad pains in my abdomen again, and I keep on making excuses. At this point, I was just thinking, I ate too quickly, because I don't want to go to the hospital. It's scary. People die there. So I go to sleep early because I just hoped whenever I woke up, the pain would be gone. I've never been more wrong in my life. I was even worse when I woke up. It was 4 o'clock. And I took my temperature. It was 102 degrees, which is very rare for me because I never get a temperature whenever I'm sick. So we went to the hospital. And as I was in the car ride with my mom, I was just bawling my eyes out, apologizing to her, saying, I'm sorry you have to take you to the hospital. I'm so sorry. And she's like, no, 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 it's fine. This is what a parent does. I didn't believe her. So when we get to the hospital, I got the initial exam, and they weren't able to diagnose me with anything. So they took me and scheduled me for a ultrasound, and they thought that they saw something weird with my appendix. And so they took me for a CAT scan after that to confirm what they thought was appendicitis, and it was. Yep. So they put me in line for surgery at Riley. They're contacting Riley and all that. And they basically rejected me because they said I'm old enough and they know how to do a drain better and all that. So they just kept me there and put me in line for the hospital. And you know, I didn't really feel comfortable here, but I'm just high on morphine in this bed. And they were just like, okay, we're gonna change it up. We're gonna have a different doctor. And this doctor has never operated on kids before. I'm 14. I am not 20 some year old, okay? So I was nervous, but then a few minutes later, meaning 40 minutes, he came in, and he was Asian, so I trusted him completely after that, you know? So after the surgery, I was high on anesthesia. Whenever they told me, I could not remember, but I'm gonna not go too into depth here, but apparently my appendix was ruptured, and it was gangrenous, and it was spreading infection all over, which is why I'm having so much pain. And usually when you have appendicitis, you want to get to the hospital probably within 24 to 72 hours so you don't get sepsis, which is infection in the blood, which can eventually kill you if you do not get it treated. I didn't go to the hospital for a month because I kept on ignoring it. So I learned that I should never ignore pains and that sometimes it is good to worry. But overall, I learned that I think that this was kind of an example of what God can do for me, because I could have easily died from all this happening, but I didn't. And I think that he was just letting me know his true power and his presence is always there, even when it seems like I'm all alone. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rochelle. I think we will all definitely keep that in mind, especially when we get pains ourselves in the future. Our next story is from Lucas Longer, called The Fight Scene. Now, Lucas is a freshman at the academy, and he's taller than his family members. He also loves building 3D puzzles. Come on, Lucas.
Okay, so a long time ago, during I believe middle school. I was an eighth grader at the time. It was like nearly at the end of our eighth grade year, and we were doing this play called Star-Crossed. It was a fused creation made by my music teacher, Mr. Chris, with the Romeo and Juliet play mixed with the modern cover story, West Side Story. And so me and my classmates liked doing this play, and we had to do two fight scenes in this play. One fight scene was at the beginning of the very, very, very beginning at the play, and the other was like after the blade fight with the two gang members are dead. And so we were doing rehearsals of the play, and so we were practicing these fight scenes, and I was a jet member, so I had to fight a shark member. We were all assigned fighting a shark member. And so since I was like one of the tallest members of my class, I had to fight not one shark member but two, and so it was fine. And at the opening night, during these two fight scenes, I was sort of embarrassed because and really guilty because the worst part of it was that both of them, whose names were Miles and Aiden, I believe, they were both short. And so yeah, fighting two very short people when you're tall felt so wrong. And so I tried my best to pull fake punches to them and be affected by their fake punches. And yeah, but I couldn't resist fake slamming both of them together since I was tall. And yeah, both of those fight scenes, they were like beehives because mostly it was like shuffling and falling down and stuff, like two like white shirt bees buzzing with black shirt bees. And yeah, my classmates and I both agreed that both of the fight scenes were very bad, and we never spoke of it again. And so after the opening night and like a month after, it was during graduation time, we created this song. It was like a middle school reflection of the year 2017. It was different lyrics, but it had the same tune of Officer Krupke. It was in the song West Side Story. And there was a one verse called "We're Bad at Our Fight Scenes." So, yeah. The fight scenes were bad, but the rest of the play was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. That was very wonderfully said, and I quite like that story. Next, we're going to be getting a story from Julia Adam called My Second Grade Wall. Julia is a freshman who is originally from Scotland. She's confident and charismatic. One of her favorite hobbies is to love making people laugh. All right, Julia.
Okay, so you know how in second grade we don't know what common sense is, right? Okay, so well, I was one of the students that didn't know the concept of it at all. So we were standing in our assembly line near the railing above the stairs, and the teacher was like, "I'll be right back. I just need to go talk to another teacher about something." So we wait there, and I was blessed with the last name Adam by my father, so I had to be in front of the line. Now, this isn't a big problem usually, but in this instance, it's quite embarrassing. So basically, I'm usually really absent-minded, so my mind wanders a lot. And so I look at the railing, and I'm like, "Oh, that's a nice railing." For some reason, I say that. I don't know. It was painted, you know. So I looked at it, and my mind goes, "What if I put my hand in that?" And so I did it. So I start messing with the railing because I'm bored, and I start sliding my hand in it. And then the teacher comes back, and she's like, "Okay, let's go back to the classroom." And so we all start walking, but when I try to walk, something tugs on my arm. I look at it, and I don't realize until like a few seconds later, so I'm just staring at it like this, my arm, and I'm like, "Wait a minute, I'm stuck to this railing." And I'm one of those kids that is really like shy and quiet, especially in second grade, because I just like moved from Scotland to America. So I'm standing there with my hand in the railing, and everyone's passing me. So I look at the railing, like, "Oh yeah, it's a nice railing," like pretending not to pay attention. But really everyone knows my hand is stuck in this railing. So everyone starts walking away, and I look back up, and I see my teacher walking away. And so I'm like, "Oh crap, what do I do?" So I look at her, and I'm like, "Miss, miss." She doesn't realize, so I'm like, "Miss, I need help." And she comes back over, and she just kind of looks at me like, "Got your arm stuck in the railing, didn't you?" Now, this has never happened before. I wonder why. I'm just special, I guess. So she walks away, and I'm like, "Come back, are you just going to leave me?" And then she comes back with hand sanitizer. I'm like, "Okay, thank God." And she puts it on my arm. We try to yank my arm out, and it's not moving. So a few teachers walk past at this point, and I'm just so embarrassed. I just want to die. I want my mom to come over and just cut my arm off like she said she would. I'm just scared. And so all the teachers surround me, and I'm like, "Great. Everyone knows I'm an idiot." So then one walks away and comes back with the janitor. I'm like, "Okay, good. No, someone knows what they're doing." And he has butter, and I'm like, where did you get that? But then I'm like, whatever, it's the janitor. I don't know. And so he puts the butter on my arm. It's not budging. And so I'm like, I'm going to be stuck to this railing for the rest of my life. I'm going to take it with me everywhere. I'm just going to die here alone with all these teachers and people staring at me. This is not how I pictured my death. So the janitor walked away again. I'm like, okay, hopefully he gets something more efficient. Comes back with a screwdriver. And so I'm looking at him and I'm like, is this when he cuts off my hand? Because I hope, because I just want to get it over with. I'm tired, I'm humiliated, I just want to go back to class. And so he goes to the railing and he starts unscrewing it. And then he goes to the other side and starts unscrewing that. So the whole railing falls off. I'm just staring at it like, I did this. I didn't have to do this, but I did it. I look at my arm and it's all red and I'm just like, well, now my mom's gonna know about this. So I walk back to class after washing my hands and arm and all that. And I sit down. I'm like, okay, I'm fine. None of my classmates know about this. Right? So I'm one of those kids that likes to take out a bunch of stuff for class for no reason. And I never use it because I just always draw. So it's like, why do I bother take out stuff? So everyone leaves before me. And I'm getting my stuff picked up at the end of class. And some kids run in. They're like, Julia, did you see the wall? Did you see the wall? I'm like, what wall? And so I pick up my stuff and I walk out to the wall that we're talking about. And it's the wall where the railing was. And it's on there now. But I look up and it's just a piece of paper. And I'm like, oh God, what? So I walk over and it just says Julia's wall, smiley face. And everyone's looking at it and everyone's laughing at it. And then they all look at me and start laughing at me. And I'm like, this is great. So basically what I learned from this is don't be an idiot. That's it. Like, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for that story, Julia. I quite enjoyed that. I thought it was very funny. And now let's move on to Aaliyah Cagle with her story, Don't Mix Blood with Cake. Now, Aaliyah is a sophomore, and her favorite things are staying home and sleeping soundly. Give it up for Aaliyah.
Okay. When I was 5, I lived in Colorado, and all my relatives lived here in Indiana. And it became a tradition for them to come visit us and make cookies. And that's when I started getting into baking. And 2 years ago, my mom got me some baking stuff for Christmas. And the next day, I decided I wanted to make a cake. So I was in the kitchen, and my mom was in her room. And I was yelling, asking where everything was, and she was getting really annoyed. And so I gathered all the ingredients, I put it in the bowl, and I was using like this hand mixer with blades, and the butter gets stuck in it, so I have this smart idea to stick my finger in it, and my hand hits the button, and it's like there for like, it's on for like not even half a second, and I'm thinking I just got a little cut, and I look down, and I got cut all the way around the tip of my finger. And so I run over to the sink, and I'm crying, and I'm bleeding, and like, I'm crying because I thought I was gonna lose my finger, not really because it hurt, but I'm standing over the sink, and I look over, and my brother is watching YouTube. And I call for my mom again, and she finally comes out, and I tell her I cut my finger, and she runs over to get paper towels and wraps up my finger, and takes me to urgent care, and she didn't want to go to the ER because she didn't think it was that big of a problem. But we sat there for like an hour and they told us to go to the ER. So we went to the ER and they cleaned my finger and gave me this really painful shot. And shots usually don't hurt me because I used to think that they were tickled me, so I laughed. And the shot hurt a lot and I was crying. And they ended up giving me 14 stitches. And what I learned from this is to not stick your finger in things.
Thank you so much, Aaliyah. I think that was a very valuable lesson to learn, especially after that situation.